Welcome to Class Matters, an educational program examining the role played by social classes and the class divide in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Rich Whitney.
I'm Paula.
We discuss matters of class because class matters. And today on Class Matters, we bring you another episode on the general topic of how the U.S. ruling class is continuing its intensifying strangulation of what remains of democratic process and democratic rights and protections in this country. In recent programs, we have been focusing on the role of the national security state, sometimes called the deep state, basically the military-industrial complex and the intelligence agencies, in controlling the corporate media, policing and censoring speech on social media, and otherwise controlling the flow of information and promoting their own agenda while suppressing anyone who challenges that agenda. But today we're going to examine another aspect of this, namely the deep state's shrouding of its own activities in secrecy under the system of classifying documents. This has been in the news recently, of course, with the recent indictment of former President Donald Trump for allegedly removing classified documents from the White House and taking them to his home in Mar-a-Lago when he left office. As we shall see, this is a case of selective prosecution and a brazenly politicized prosecution reeking of hypocrisy and double standards. But it's more than that. The larger story here is the national security state using the system of classifying documents in the first place in order to conceal its immoral, unethical, and often criminal conduct from the American people. And once again, we find that the most incisive commentary on this subject has come from independent journalist and constitutional lawyer Glenn Greenwald, who really nails it here. So we're going to present an excerpt from his program, System Update, discussing this. System Update is a weeknightly news commentary and interview program hosted by Greenwald, which you can watch for free on Rumble.com, the free speech alternative to YouTube. If you go to Rumble.com and search for Glenn Greenwald, Glenn with two N's, you will find it. And the following excerpt is from Program 96, entitled Trump's Indictment Upends Decades of Lax Classified Docs Precedent.
An indictment was unsealed earlier today from the Southern District of Florida that charges former President Donald Trump with 7 felony counts, 5 of which pertain to allegations that he mishandled classified information when taking still secret documents from the White House to Mar-a-Lago, where he then, according to the indictment, showed them to other people, even though they were still classified, and 2 other counts that relate to his efforts to obstruct the DOJ investigation that was supervised by the Biden Justice Department and carried out by a special counsel. Now, it probably is the case, based on everything we know, including Trump's own admissions, that he took documents that at least at one point had been deemed classified and that were still marked classified when he left the White House, and he took those to Mar-a-Lago. And under the law, you could make the case that that is technically illegal. There is nobody in the United States with the power or the authority to take classified documents and show them to people who are not authorized to see them or even to take them out of classified settings. Trump's defense, or one of his defenses, which we will get to, is that it is extremely odd, and we agree, to try and prosecute someone for mishandling classified information when that person, at the time they took them, was the president of the United States, which means, by definition, that he had the absolute and unilateral and unreviewable power to declassify any documents he wanted. There's no congressional act required. There's no legal challenge available. The president at any time has the power to classify information and to declassify information without having to explain or account to anybody for why he did that and without any act of Congress or any other regulatory body necessary. And so Trump's argument, or one of them, is that prior to leaving the White House, he sort of waved a magic wand and said, I hereby declassified all these documents, or he said that to himself, and those documents presto became unclassified, and therefore he could not have broken the law by taking these unclassified materials or showing them to anybody else. Now, we will get to the reason why, at the very least, it does seem extremely strange to prosecute somebody who was president of the United States at the time they supposedly took these documents, even though they had the power to render them declassified at any time. A president has total control over classified documents. But I want to make a few observations first before we get to both the indictment and to prior historical similar cases that I think really put this indictment into context and make clear that it is another case of the political establishment very scared that Donald Trump is going to run again in 2024 and win. All polls right now show that he would. And because they fear his return to the White House and believe they may not have a chance to defeat him politically, they thought they did in 2016 and he won. They were sure they were going to beat him in 2020 and he came. It was a very close election. And now they are, with Biden having to defend the status quo, with him being 82 years old, with him being obviously addled, are petrified that Trump will run and win again. And one of the ways that establishments in other countries we've seen this try to render people ineligible who they don't want to run is by concocting criminal charges against them and rendering them legally ineligible, or at least dirtying their name enough to make it impossible for them to run, where they almost have to run from a prison cell, which very well may be the case with President Trump, given not just this indictment, but the one that came in April from the Manhattan District Attorney. So even though there are massive holes, legally speaking, in that case, which we covered on a prior show when the indictment was revealed, he could end up being convicted for that indictment. He could end up being convicted for this current one. And there's still the chance that he may be indicted because of speeches that he gave that the Biden Justice Department might want to say incited what they regard as the insurrection on January 6th. Liberals are desperate for Merrick Garland to come up with an indictment against Trump for that. So there's three possible cases at least criminally that he's facing and could very well put him in prison in 2024 and make him either run from prison for president or try and plea bargain his way out of those charges by agreeing not to run for president, which is very revealingly what a major liberal TV personality suggested last night ought to happen, that they should let Trump out of these charges in exchange for his promise not to run in 2024, which clearly is the end goal for the establishment here. Now, whenever it comes to the question of mishandling classified information, I want to make a few points because I have some personal experience in dealing with classified information as somebody who essentially read through a large archive, a massive archive of top secret documents in the past, and had to make choices about which documents to publish and which ones not to publish, and somebody who has worked with sources who has faced the same challenges, including in the Snowden case and in WikiLeaks cases. And one of the things I think it's so important to note is that in Washington, almost everything is deemed classified. So all the time we hear, because the government wants us to think, that if a document is deemed classified or secret, and especially top secret, it means that this is an incredibly sensitive document and that national security would be jeopardized if anybody were able to see it. And yet, to say that that's untrue, that that's a fairy tale, is to put it mildly. The reality is one of the main problems we have in the United States is that the United States government reflexively makes everything that it does a secret, legally, to the point where it's a felony to reveal anything that they do. If you think about it, in a healthy democracy, in a functioning republic, the way things are supposed to work is that we're supposed to know essentially everything about what our government does. There are some exceptions if they're ordering troop movements in a war, if there are documents about how to launch nuclear weapons. Of course, there are times where secrecy is appropriate, but that should be the exception, not the rule. The rule should be we're supposed to know what our government is doing. There's supposed to be transparency in how public power is being exercised. That's why it's called the public sector. It's supposed to be something that everyone can see how they're exercising their power, with very few exceptions. Conversely, the government's not supposed to know anything about what we do as private citizens. That's why we're called private citizens. That's why the right of privacy is guaranteed in the Constitution. That's why the founders emphasized all the protections that we had to have over the government's ability to learn things about us, to search our homes, to search our documents. They could only do that with a search warrant and a finding of probable cause. So the framework in any healthy democracy is we know everything about what our government does and they know nothing about what we do. And again, there are some exceptions to that as well. The government is supposed to learn things about us. If they can go to a court and show there's probable cause that we committed a crime, they get a search warrant, they can read our emails, listen to our phone calls, but that's supposed to be the exception. And what has happened in the United States is that that is completely reversed. In the United States, almost everything the U.S. government does is secret, is taking place behind a wall of opaque lack of transparency. We know almost nothing about what our government does because everything's done in the dark behind this wall of secrecy. And at the same time, because of the ubiquitous surveillance state that has been implemented, the spying that is done by the NSA and the FBI, not only on people they get search warrants for, but on all of us, they know almost everything about what we do, about with whom we communicate, about how we use the internet, about with whom we're communicating, and oftentimes where we are. And so this framework has been completely reversed. And one of the reasons, one of the ways I first learned about that and started realizing that was when I started going through the Snowden Archive. And the Snowden Archive, the archive that he gave to me and Laura Poitras and other journalists, is an archive filled with hundreds of thousands of documents, if not more, taken from the NSA. Many of them pertain to the CIA or the Pentagon or Homeland Security or Allied intelligence services in the UK, in Canada, Australia, New Zealand. Every single document essentially in this archive bears a secrecy designation. Most of them are top secret. And yet one of the things that was so striking to me as I was going through this archive is that most of the documents I was seeing, despite the fact that they were marked top secret, were completely banal, boring even. There were instructions on how NSA employees should obtain parking credentials or requesting vacation days, and that would be marked secret, which meant technically it was a crime to disclose it. And that was true of the vast majority of the archive. And that's because in Washington, everything is reflexively a secret. It's reflexively marked classified, and therefore it's illegal to describe what the government is doing. So often, for that reason, when I hear, oh, so-and-so leaked classified information or was careless with classified materials, the reason I scoff at that is because I know that most often classified documents are harmless. They're empty. It just means the government is talking about them or doing them. That's all it means. There's no discretion ever exercised about what should and shouldn't be secret. Everything is made secret in Washington. We just heard with the now forgotten leak by that young leaker who was discovered on Discord, Jack Teixeira, when that leak was first unveiled and there were reports that he had leaked classified or top secret information, we heard, oh, these are the most sensitive documents the government has. This is the most damaging and destructive leak in American history. As though the documents they always try and imply contain the names of undercover agents in the field, CIA undercover agents, or people who are working as informants to the U.S. government. And then when we saw the documents, we saw that all of that was untrue. There was almost nothing in these documents that was barely above the level of what was publicly reported about the war in Ukraine. There were a few documents showing where U.S. troops were stationed. Possibly that is legitimately classified, but it's not as though the world crumbles if that gets revealed, because those documents were revealed. And to this day, there's no harm demonstrated. And that's true in almost every case. When WikiLeaks first published its motherload of top secret information, many national security officials came out under the Obama administration and claimed WikiLeaks had blood on its hands. And yet later on, when media outlets tried to investigate that claim, they discovered that there was actually no harm that could be demonstrated to any individual as a result of WikiLeaks' publications. They hadn't uncovered the names of any agents in the field. They hadn't put in danger anyone, because they were actually very careful about how they were redacting those documents. And even the documents in unredacted form ended up being harmless, though informative. And the same is true in the Snowden case. They made all those claims about how blood would be on our hands because we were disclosing these documents. And to this day, if you ask a single national security official to be specific about any harm that was caused as a result of the reporting we did, they are incapable of providing any explanation. Same with the Pentagon Papers. It's always the same claim. Oh, this is an incredibly dangerous leak. It puts people in harm's way. Because the reality is the only people it endangers and the only people these leaks harm are the people whose criminal acts or deceit are unveiled. That's who gets harmed. And almost never the public. Now, we've heard already in the indictment that some of these documents that President Trump is alleged to have taken involve things like nuclear strategy and a potential attack on Iran. But there's absolutely no evidence, it's not even alleged, that any harm got created as a result of President Trump's mishandling of these materials, if he in fact did it, or his decision to share with certain people what the content of these documents was. He was able to do that for 4 years had he wanted. To the extent there's an implication that he was trying to help America's enemies or anything else, he had control of the entire classified system. So I say all this to be very, very skeptical when you hear this hysteria about what it means to leak classified information, including top secret documents, because I've seen firsthand how deceitful those claims almost always are. That's the first issue about classified information. Second point that I want to make is, in these cases where people leak classified information, the motive is always the most important question. There's a big difference between being careless with classified information, the way President Trump is accused of being, the way Hillary Clinton was accused of being, though never got charged, versus having some malicious motive, the way David Petraeus, President Obama's former CIA director, was accused of when he shared genuinely sensitive documents with his mistress in order to enable her to write an adoring biography of him. Or when Leon Panetta shared top secret information about the operation that led to Osama bin Laden's capture because he wanted filmmakers in Hollywood to be able to make a pre-election hagiography about President Obama and his capture of Osama bin Laden called Zero Dark 30. Obviously, if someone sells classified information to an enemy government or passes them to an enemy government, that's a malicious motive entirely. And then you have the most noble motive, which is somebody inside the government who has access to classified information discovers that the government is lying or engaging in criminality, and the disclosure of these documents would reveal it. So what is President Trump's motive here, allegedly? Was he trying to help enemy governments? Was he trying to expose government secrets to put people in danger? There's no allegation of that. At best, this is a case of carelessness, of taking some documents that he should have left in the White House, but believing he had the right to take them because he was the president. I think that is another key point, is that, and I covered this earlier, that's what makes this case so bizarre. It's one thing to take lower-level national security officials and prosecute them for disclosing classified material without authorization because they have no legal right to declassify information. The classification designations bear on them, bind them. But when it comes to the person who's the president, if they have the power to declassify, at best, it's a bureaucratic transgression to take documents without having first declassified them. It's a bureaucratic oversight, which is at most what this was, just like the indictment in Manhattan alleges that President Trump and the Trump Organization improperly classified the payments to Stormy Daniels as payments to Michael Cohen. It was a bookkeeping misdemeanor that Alvin Bragg, for political motives, turned into a felony. It's not unlike what this case is either, if you think about it. They acknowledge that President Trump had the power to declassify this material had he wanted. They allege that he failed to, that he forgot to, that he neglected to, but he could have. And had he done so, there's no question this wouldn't be a crime. Once material is declassified, it's no longer a crime to take it, to mishandle it, to show it to other people. So if President Trump had the power to declassify this information, and the argument is he just failed to, at best, these 7 felony counts amount to what is really nothing more than a bureaucratic oversight, which happens to be the same basis for the Manhattan indictment as well. Now, one other point that I think is critical to note is that the hypocrisy at the heart of this case and the reaction to it is so large that it could explode mountains. Washington runs on leaks of classified information every single day, literally every single day. People inside the government call up their favorite media employees, their favorite employees of corporate media, and they leak classified information to them. And almost nobody is prosecuted for this, ever, even when the motive is purely political. Throughout the Trump years, we had some of the most serious, some of the gravest leaks of classified information leaks imaginable to the Washington Post and the New York Times seemingly every day as part of Russiagate or other efforts to sabotage or undermine Donald Trump. And to this day, nobody cares about finding those leakers because in Washington, leaking classified information is what makes that city run. It's what makes the political establishment run. It's what makes the media establishment run. Just to give you one example, most of you are probably familiar with the case of Michael Flynn, the incoming national security advisor for President Trump, who was prosecuted by the Mueller investigation for the crime of picking up the telephone and calling the Russian ambassador in order to say, I'm about to become national security advisor. I think we should smooth over U.S.-Russian relations, which is exactly what you would want an incoming national security advisor to do. But because they were determined to criminalize Michael Flynn, they turned that into a felony. And then the FBI, on its own, went to General Flynn, having learned through a telephone intercept that they talked to the ambassador, and they made a perjury trap for him. They said, when you talked to the ambassador, the Russian ambassador, did you talk about sanctions? And this was weeks later. His memory was foggy. He had no reason to cover it up. It wouldn't have been a crime for him to talk to the Russian ambassador, but they claim, and the notes are very ambiguous, that General Flynn said, I'm not sure I did, or I don't think I did. And that became the foundation for the criminal prosecution, a perjury or obstruction charge, which is what they do. They turn process crimes into the way to criminalize the people that they want criminalized. Now, we did an entire show on the Michael Flynn prosecution here on Rumble an hour and a half before we launched this nightly show back when we were doing periodic ones. I wrote an accompanying article for it when I was still at The Intercept about the fraud of that prosecution. For years, under liberal jurisprudence, there was a belief, most vehemently expressed by Ruth Bader Ginsburg and other liberal justices of the Supreme Court, that you should not be able to be turned into a criminal simply because you falsely deny behavior to the FBI, that you have the right to deny to the FBI things that you've done that could lead to a criminal prosecution, that that's a form of the right against self-incrimination. And yet that was the entire basis of the prosecution of Michael Flynn. But the important thing about this prosecution is that the only reason we learned that Michael Flynn called Ambassador Kislyak and talked about sanctions was because the NSA was spying on Ambassador Kislyak. He was a target of NSA surveillance, which makes sense. He's a high-level official in a adverse foreign government. That's what the NSA does. And they happened to catch Ambassador Kislyak talking to an American citizen, Michael Flynn, even though they had no warrants. Now, this spying, eavesdropping, this kind of eavesdropping, where the NSA spies on a foreign citizen and therefore claims they need no warrants, and then ends up eavesdropping on a call that an American citizen has with that foreign target, that was the basis for the George Bush, Dick Cheney illegal eavesdropping scheme in 2002. It used to be you needed a warrant if you found out that someone you were listening to ended up talking to an American citizen, because foundationally to American democracy and the American Constitution is the idea that the U.S. government cannot spy on your calls unless it has a warrant, even if you're talking to a foreign adversary or foreign citizen. But in 2007 and 8, the Congress, with the support of the Democratic Party, changed that law and retroactively legalized the Bush-Cheney spying program to make it legal for the NSA to spy on your calls without a warrant as long as you're talking to a foreign citizen. And that was how they eavesdropped on the call of Michael Flynn, even though they had no warrant to do so. They claimed, oh, Michael Flynn wasn't really our target. Our target was the Russian ambassador whom he called. And the way we ended up learning about Michael Flynn's conversation with the ambassador is because somebody inside the U.S. government leaked the transcript of the NSA intercept to the Washington Post's David Ignatius, who was the first in early 2017 to report that Michael Flynn had called the Russian ambassador and talked about sanctions. And under the law, under the criminal law, that is the most serious kind of leaking of classified information, leaking the intercepts that the NSA has on the calls of foreign leaders and foreign officials, because obviously if you leak those kind of transcripts, it makes those individuals like Ambassador Kislyak aware that the NSA has successfully eavesdropped on them, and it of course makes them change how they communicate. And so This is one of the few areas leaking NSA intercepts where it's a crime, a felony, not only to leak it from inside the government, but also to publish it. It's one of the few types of leaks that makes it a crime for the journalist to publish it. That's how serious they regard these leaks. And yet, to this day, 5 years later, not only was the leaker never caught, the one who leaked the transcript of the NSA call to David Ignatius, no one talks about it, no one cares, because these kinds of leaks happen every day. All the people you see on TV who are expressing outrage and indignation that President Trump would treat classified information carelessly or recklessly or whatever, every single day people inside the government call them and give them classified information. Every day you turn on CNN or you open the New York Times or the Washington Post, and there will be stories saying anonymous sources tell us X, Y, and Z happened where X, Y, and Z is classified. These leaks are the stuff on which Washington runs. And nobody ever is prosecuted except low-level leakers, people like Edward Snowden or Chelsea Manning or Daniel Ellsberg. They go to prison for a long time for doing it, but senior officials in Washington are never prosecuted, essentially, for this. And if they are prosecuted, they are never really treated like criminals. They never go to prison. And that's what makes this prosecution of President Trump for doing something that happens every day in Washington so suspicious. Now, I've heard people saying, look, if you break the law, you should go to jail, you should be prosecuted, and the fact that other people break the law and aren't prosecuted makes no difference. But that is not how the law works. In every other instance, you can argue that whataboutism doesn't matter. So you say, oh, Russia committed a war crime because they used this certain weapon here, cluster bombs or whatever, and then someone comes along and says, well, the United States uses those weapons, and Ukraine uses those weapons, and the UK uses the weapon, and Israel uses those weapons. And then the response is, oh, that's whataboutism. Who cares if other people do it too? If Russia does it, it's wrong. And that's the kind of argument being marshaled here. Who cares if everybody in Washington constantly leaks classified information? The fact that President Trump did it means he should be prosecuted, but that is not how the law works. The law is an extremely potent weapon. It can put you in a cage. It can deprive you of your liberty. It can seize your assets. It can even, in some cases, take your life. And so in order for the law to be accepted in a society that the government has the power through force to come and take you and put you in a cage, it needs to have credibility as law. It needs to be something other than just a brute weapon that's used against political enemies. And the only way to ensure that the law has credibility is if it's applied consistently and universally and not selectively. That's why in law, precedent is everything. How the law has been applied in other similar cases always guides how we view the law in this case. And the fact that, as we're about to show you, so many people who were on the side of the establishment, who were judged politically favorably by the establishment, who did exactly what President Trump is accused to have done, but far worse, the fact that they were given slaps on the wrist or never even prosecuted, of course sheds enormous light on the motives at play here and therefore on the validity of the prosecution. Now, the final point I want to make before going into these historical examples is one of the laws that has been invoked as the basis for these charges against President Trump is the Espionage Act of 1917. And for those who didn't see it, we devoted last night's show, before we knew President Trump had been indicted under this law, in the context of the ongoing attempt to extradite Julian Assange to stand trial in the United States, we devoted the show to how this Espionage Act of 1917 is one of the most repressive and unjust laws in the U.S. Code. And I won't repeat that here, just because the context is President Trump, but I would encourage you, if you haven't already watched it, to go back and watch the show we did last night where we went into detail on the history of that law and the reasons why it gives the government obscene amounts of power. As I said, the two other counts are not about President Trump's taking classified information, but are about his alleged obstruction of the investigation into this. And that's so often what happened in the Mueller investigation. They would investigate somebody, they wouldn't find a crime, but they would turn the person into criminals during the investigation. That's how they convicted Michael Flynn and got him to plead guilty. Roger Stone, and so many others.
All right, there's much more to this analysis, but we're just about out of time on this episode of Class Matters. You've been listening to independent journalist Glenn Greenwald on his program, System Update. You can watch and listen to the rest of his analysis on his program on rumble.com and go to episode 96. Thanks for listening to Class Matters, and we'll be with you again next Monday.